episode 2 of the Masters of Our Horror Domain, a side series that me and my co-host Sonya Campbell do about all the horror and weirdness of one of our favorite shows, Seinfeld. On this episode, we dissect season 2 and find all the horror goodness and all the strangeness that Seinfeld brings. So, definitely hope you dig this. And if you're a Seinfeld fan, you definitely will dig this. After you're done with this episode, make sure you check out my fellow horsemen of the podcast apocalypse, Everything Went Black podcast, Into the Necrosphere, the Necromaniacs podcast, Spitball Media, Iblis Manifestations, and the Soul Knox podcast. And also, don't forget to check out the Horrorwolf 666 Podcast Tee Public Store. I have a really killer new design up there by my friend Jacob of the band All Hell. So definitely want to check that out. It's really cool, I think. And don't forget to leave a rating on wherever you listen to the podcast at, Spotify, iTunes, wherever. It helps, and it's much appreciated. So hope you dig this episode, and thanks for listening. All right, so this is going to be the second episode of the Masters of Our Horror Domain, our Seinfeld horror podcast.
I forgot we called it that. That's so funny.
Yeah, I had to go back and look. I was like, what the fuck were we calling this again? I was like, okay, yeah, there it is, the Masters of Our Horror Domain. It's pretty catchy. A little bit hard to say, though.
Yeah, it's weird. I think I was saying of our Masters of Our... No, I don't remember what I was saying. Something like inverse of that.
Yeah, I think it was something a little different, and then I heard it a different way. So,
Horror Masters of Our Domain.
Horror Masters of Our Domain. Okay, well, I guess close enough. This is a tongue twister, so either way.
Either way is ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think this is a cool thing to touch on because a lot of my friends are big Seinfeld fans and also big horror fans. So I think this kind of like scratches the itch for both of those, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't like Seinfeld, I have to question your ability or, question what you actually do like, I don't know. Are you a Friends fan or something? Like, hey, nothing wrong with that. But it's not my thing.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I prefer Seinfeld over Friends, but I don't mind Friends, but neither of them I watched when they were out. Like, I was too young to understand the humor.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, of course, like maybe a decade later, I started watching both of them. I'm like, oh, this is great.
You know what ruined me on Friends? It was an ex-girlfriend I had a long ass time ago. That's all she was. She would watch nothing but Friends over and over and over. And I was like, fuck, that fucking theme song and everything. I'm like... so bad. And I ended up hating it. I couldn't watch an episode. I watched a few episodes. I'm like, I just can't do it. And, she totally ruined it for me. So it's probably where my hatred comes from for Friends. So
I could see that. That's obnoxious.
Yeah, people got to ruin shit, man. But before we get into our Seinfeld talk and stuff, have you checked anything out recently that's noteworthy?
Well, I mean, let's see. I did watch a couple movies that I'd never seen before that are related to the episodes we're going to talk about. But, in the theater, I want to see that new movie about the horror, TV show. Do you know what I'm talking about? It just came out.
Oh, shit. Yeah, because there's a big fuss about AI being used in it or something, but it looks really cool, I think. Late Night with the Devil or something like that.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, uh-huh. So I might see that like maybe this week or something. Yeah, Late Night with the Devil. So I don't know. I don't know if it's necessarily a theater movie I need to see, but I'm gonna make sure I check that out. As far as like horror films, so there's some coming up that I'm excited about this year. I think the last one I saw in the theater was Out of Darkness, the one that was like cavemen. I don't know if you know anything about it, but they made it seem like it was going to be like demons or some kind of curse, but it wasn't.
Out of Darkness? No, I don't know. I think I've heard of that one.
So that one, it was okay, but Of course, the most recent film I was crazy about was Dune 2. I've talked about that up and down. It's just so great. Like, did you say you only seen the first one so far? Is that right?
Yeah, I haven't seen the second one yet, and I want to see the second one. We looked up some theater prices and stuff, and you know, you have to pick your seats now, which is kind of lame. Like, all the seats that are chosen are the ones we kind of want, so it's kind of a no-go right now.
We'll do it early. Yeah, it's definitely worth seeing in the theater if you can. So, I mean, it was just like insane. So, but like films coming up, I think that there's a vampire movie called Abigail coming out next month that looks pretty cool. I could be wrong. Have you seen the trailer for it at all?
I have not, but I've heard about it.
Okay, yeah. It's like a ballerina kid who's also, I think, a vampire. Yeah, she's a vampire. It looks cool. I don't know. We'll see. I'm definitely going to check it out. I see that Angus Cloud was in it. That's sad because it must have been like his last movie. He passed away.
Yeah, it had to be. Yeah.
He was so good. But yeah, that's coming up. And then did you see the trailer for the new Alien film?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. It looks great.
It looks good. Yeah.
Romulus, yeah. I mean, Fede Alvarez, he really liked what he did with Evil Dead. I thought it was a great remake of Evil Dead. And also, Don't Breathe is awesome.
Yeah, Don't Breathe is really good. I do like what he did with Evil Dead. And I like, he's kind of like got a bit of a dark thing going on with this film. You know, kind of a, he puts him a little bit in a darker mood. So hopefully with, you know, the new Aliens, it would be in that same, like, you know, that look, you know, that darker look to it.
Totally. Wasn't a fan of some, like, I guess he did Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I wasn't like into that. But for the most part, I think it's a good call for a director for this film, and great trailer. Like, it definitely feels like it's that isolated sort of, you know, throwback of it's just taking place in this space of creature versus heroine. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, definitely. It doesn't look like Alien versus Predator, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people are skeptical for good reason, just because it's been a little while. I mean, not a lot of people like the last sort of prequels and sequels that have come out, and definitely not like Alien versus Predator, things like that. Mm-hmm. So to take it seriously again would be awesome, you know, to feel the way you did in Alien itself, like. It would be awesome to see like a perfect mix of Alien and Aliens, the action plus the really sort of true sci-fi darkness.
Yeah, that would be a great combination. Yeah, and I'm hoping for the best, you know, fingers crossed on this, because I'm a big fan of the whole Alien franchise and the Predator franchise, except for a few of the films, which Alien versus Predator and the Requiem one, I just can't get into those. And was it The Predator that came out not that long ago with the big giant CGI one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, man, I wanted to like it, too. I was hyped up for it. And I did like it for a second. Then, like, thinking back on it, and so I'm like, oh, this kind of sucked. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, actually, that came up in my research because who was involved with it that I was surprised? Fred Dekker.
Yes, right. Yeah.
Yeah, Fred Dekker was a writer on that one. Pretty weird.
Yeah, I expected better things, you know, and it felt like a Michael Bay Predator movie almost, you know, with the big explosions and, you know, I don't know, it just wasn't, it didn't have that. There's a few cool scenes in it, but I just can't get down with the big giant CGI Predators. This is weird.
No, there's no reason for that.
No. Last cool thing I really watched that's hit me hard this year so far, which came out, I think it came out last year, was Poor Things. I really love Poor Things.
Yeah, I was just talking about that movie last night and how great Mark Ruffalo was in it. Like, I love Mark Ruffalo. I've always enjoyed his performances, but I've never seen him do something like this. And it was just so nuanced and funny. And, you know, I feel like he should have won an Oscar for that, you know. Like, I mean, he didn't, right? I don't even know. I don't know.
Yeah,
I know Emma Stone won for Best Actress, which is great. But yeah, I really enjoyed Poor Things. It's the next level in Yorgos Lanthimos's strange world of film that he creates. I like all of his films a lot, from Dogtooth to The Lobster to, of course, Killing of a Sacred Deer.
I love that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It makes you feel so uncomfortable. And this one, it reminded me of, let's see, what was the last one he did? I always want to say The Fountain, but it's not that. It's The Favorite. You know, like it's sort of lavish and weird and set in some strange era that you can't quite pinpoint. Mm-hmm. It's like he just keeps upping his game and it's getting more whimsical. And it's so entertaining. I'm definitely going to watch it again. I wish I had seen it in the theaters, though.
Yeah, this seems like a good theater movie.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed like all the actors. It was cool to see Christopher Abbott in there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I totally enjoyed it. And I forgot he did The Fountain. Is that the one with Hugh Jackman?
No, The Favorite.
Oh, The Favorite. I was like, he did The Fountain? Like The Fountain is like one of the saddest movies I've ever seen. Oh, my goodness. It's a sad fucking movie.
I was saying I keep saying The Fountain, but I mean The Favorite. Yeah.
Okay.
That came out in 2018. That was a good one with Olivia Colman and also Emma Stone.
Okay, cool. I don't think I've seen that one. I need to add that to the list there. I want to be a completionist with this work, and I've seen pretty much everything else. So,
yeah.
Another one I've seen recently, that's not a new movie, but it's new to me. It came out back in like 2014. And my friend Jeff from the Necromaniacs podcast, he's like always talking about this movie. It's not a horror movie, but it is fucking intense as fuck. And it's called Whiplash. Have you ever seen that?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
I don't know how I missed it. It totally went past my radar.
Really? Yeah, it was a huge film when it came out, and like, you know, Academy Award winning Damien Chazelle film. It's so good. It just like I love that theme of like a person working their ass off to be the best at something, and like that relationship between Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons is so intense. Like J.K. Simmons is nuts.
Dude,
it's such
a
cool like last scene. Yeah, it's such a good movie.
Yeah, his intensity is like fucking 11. I was like, fuck. Yeah. I hope he won an Oscar for that or some kind of award. You know, that both of them, they deserve like all the awards.
It's like abusive, you know, but also like you want a teacher like that too.
Right.
Yeah, he's amazing. Yeah, it's a good one. It won a bunch of awards. Yeah, he won for Best Supporting Actor. He won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, J.K. Simmons. Also a Golden Globe and a Screen Actors Award. Like, nobody could come close to him. He won all the awards that year.
Good for him, because that's like a 10 out of 10 movie, and I rarely give 10 out of 10s anymore. I was like, this is really fucking... It was so intense when I got done watching. It's like, it felt like I was drumming, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
dude crazy. Gets hit by a giant car wreck out of nowhere, gets out and still tries to perform. Like, this motherfucker's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. I've known people like that where you're just like, what the fuck? Like, calm down. He's so obsessive. But I love it because it's like that extreme, you know, you can kind of relate to the extreme part of it in a different way, you know, where you've felt passionate about something. I think what's so captivating about the movie is that everybody, you know, with ambition at least can relate to some part of that movie of just like, yeah, you know, you want someone to push you in those times, and you also are driven to be, you know, like you're driven to excel at something. And that was just cool and fun to see it in an extreme version.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it brings back memories of like recording in the studio and stuff too. Like, everything sounds a certain way in your head before you get in there. Like, oh yeah, I got this shit. I've been practicing this part. And you get in there and find out you're totally off time and all this stuff. And it's like, no matter what you do, you're not in the right time. And you know, it's like, but you're going to get it. But it's like, you're sweating your ass off and fucking, you know, stressed out.
Oh man. What do you play again? Was it bass also or guitar?
No, I do guitar, vocals, and now I'm a synth keyboard player for, right, you know, Braxis Horn. But yeah, guitar is my main thing.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of pressure on guitar. I don't know. I mean, when we've gone in to record, we're just kind of like the way that the studio, which is a great studio, Justin Stone here in Tucson, owned by Gabriel Sullivan. And it's such a nice, awesome atmosphere and setup where you go in and you just play as if you're playing at practice. So it doesn't, you know, and that kind of feeling is very comfortable. And like, we only did like a couple takes or so of like the songs, and then we were good.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then like, if you go back and listen, you can hear like some imperfections, but they make it fine. You know, they make, I think imperfections in music is okay.
Oh yeah. 100%. I don't want something sounding like a computer made everything, you know. I want to hear like real people, you know, playing their instruments.
Yeah. Like there's one song where I totally hit a wrong note at the end, but it actually sounds cool. So we just kept it. I didn't do it on purpose.
I got a few of those too recorded. Happy accidents, I guess. Like I can hear it, but it sounds all right. So we're going to let it go.
You know, what's funny is one thing is like after we'd gotten the songs mixed, we thought that the mixing artist had added this little sort of acoustic guitar in there. It was like a little, like, just sounded like a little, you know, acoustic guitar. And he was like, nope, I did not add that. And we were trying to figure out what in the world that was. And it turns out, because I play bass with a pick, right? But I also keep my nails, like, not short, but kind of a little bit longer. So I didn't realize that I was doing this thing when I stopped the strings. I would stop them with my nails, and it made this little like that. But it sounds cool in time.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like, oh, okay, well, that's a happy mistake.
Yeah, that's cool. And yeah, from what I heard and everything, like since you shared so early with me, like it sounds really fucking well done. Like it's gonna be once it comes out like officially, I think it's gonna do really, really well.
I hope so. J.K. Simmons would have strangled me for that though.
You gotta keep his tempo. It's not my tempo.
He would be so mad. I was never in perfect pitch or tempo.
I've never used, I don't use a, whatchamacallit, a, I'm having a brain fart. Oh, say that again.
Auto-tuner?
No, I don't use a, damn it. What do you call it? It keeps time.
Oh yeah. Why? Metrodome. Yeah,
right?
Metrodome, right?
Yeah. Metronome. Yeah. Metronome. I've used them a few times and all, but I don't know. It feels like it takes out my natural way of thinking and stuff and everything. I'm a really decent rhythm player and stuff, so I can keep rhythm without one of those. But if somebody throws one of those on or something, I hear it in my headphones or something, it'll definitely fuck with me.
You know why I said metrodome, which is so funny? Like in one of my scripts, I have like a metrodome, like continuously referred to. And so I was like thinking metronome, and I was like, no way. In my head, I was like, there's no way it's a metronome, because there's a place here in town called Metronome, and they have like a freaking like garden gnome as their like logo.
Oh shit. I was thinking that in my head just now, like a gnome. Yeah.
Yeah. Metronome music. And I'm like, no, it's not metronome. So my brain was like not accepting. Yeah. It's a metronome, but it's not like a gnome.
I'm thinking of a gnome dressed like all like in a suit, you know, ready for the day in the metro or, you know, downtown. Oh, yeah. Metro gnome. Yeah, I think the older we get, we lose a little bit of, you know, important shit up there memory wise. Okay. It's like there's so much stuff to keep in that in your head, man. It's like some of the shit just gets thrown out. I need more room for movies and music up there. So like other shit, I just kind of toss out and forget about.
Well, it's weird. Like the amount of information, like every Cure song up until 92, I can tell you all the lyrics. Like if you put on the movie Labyrinth, I could probably say it verbatim as we watch it, you know, like, I'm like, okay, that's taking a lot of space, but it's not like we're computers with only so much space. It's like I can't clear it out for other things.
Right. Unfortunately, that'd be cool if we could, but maybe in the future we can with the Neuralink, which, you know, fuck all that. You're not putting nothing in my brain, even if I can play video games without using my hands, you know. Yeah, I'm good on that. But yeah, I can, like the movie Little Monsters, I can fucking quote that whole fucking movie. Once the movie gets started, now I need to have the movie on, then I'm like, all right, I know every goddamn line in this movie. Yeah, that and Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched the trailer yet for the new one, by the way.
You have or haven't?
Have not. Not
I
yet.
have, and I usually don't really do trailers, but I was like, it's a teaser trailer. It's only like 10 seconds. And from what I see, it looks like he's going in the route. Tim Burton is going in more of the route of how, what was it, the Addams Family show, the Wednesday show looked on Netflix. That's how this kind of looks to me, which could be, I don't know, you know, so.
But is it theatrical release? Is it related to anything like a streaming service right now?
I believe it's going to be theatrical.
Okay, well, that's good.
And Beetlejuice looks pretty good, you know?
Does it? Okay.
Yeah,
it looks good. I feel like as long as you have Keaton again, it should be.
Yeah, it should be. But, you know, I'm skeptical about it because I think the first one's perfect. And, you know, it was actually done on a really small budget, too, from what I found out from my last horror con with V. Neal was talking about how she did makeup and how small a budget they had to do Beetlejuice. So this one has a bigger budget and it's like, you know, more power behind it and stuff. I don't know. The trailer itself looked a little sterile to me, I guess.
Yeah, I don't like that, like, super clean look of things these days, but we'll see.
Yeah, I guess we'll see.
Yeah, someone was saying how they didn't think Furiosa looked good because of the CG. I'm like, what CG are you talking about? And I think it might be just how clean it looks and like the kind of filter that's on the... I don't know.
I haven't seen the trailer of that yet. How's the trailer look? Pretty good for that? I haven't seen
it. I think it looks great. I mean, I try not to watch trailers like more than once, but what I saw, I was like, hell yeah. I mean, I'm all in. I love Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see how it could be bad. Like, I'm pretty stoked, you know. I've been waiting for it for years. And I feel like as long as it's George Miller directing, like, it's not going to be bad.
No, I mean, I'm all about the Mad Max universe. So, like, I've been satisfied with everything that's come out and the whole stuff. So, we're all good. As long as, you know, he's doing the fucking movie, so.
Great actors too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it'd be good. It'd be a good action movie.
Totally. Oh shit. I was just looking up the cast and, oh, this little boy died, but never mind. This little boy.
Oh no.
Maybe he's not. No, he's alive. I don't know. There's a cute little, there's a dwarf in the new Mad Max named Quaden Vales. He looks adorable. I hope he's alive. I don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh no.
I can't tell. It's just somebody who's like, remember Quaden Vales, the young Brisbane boy who spoke about being bullied. Oh, okay. That's cool. He was being bullied, but he got a part in this movie. I love when
I know you're talking about. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, he was so, that I saw that video. It broke my heart. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He was only 9 years old. You know, I just love, there's a quote here, him saying, don't call me cute. Damn it. I just did. But, that's so cool. He's got a part in Furiosa. That's awesome. I just love, like, you know, seeing, honestly, people with dwarfism, like, doing anything, doing roles, you know, like, where they aren't meant to be, like, freaks or something. It's just like, oh, cool, they have a dwarf character. That's awesome, you know?
No, that's definitely cool. There was also a rumor about that kid that he was like back when it first dropped that he was being bullied. And so people were saying he was in his 20s and he was a millionaire.
Oh, God. People are so gross. Why do they start disgusting rumors like that? That's so stupid.
Social media for you.
It's so gross. Yeah. I'm so over like people gossiping about, you know, just anything in the public eye. Someone makes something up and then next thing you know it's like, no, it's real.
Yeah, and like people, Earth is flat and all this other dumb shit and people believe it. There's a whole conspiracy theory about believing that. Then there's one about that the dinosaurs never existed. It's all fake. I'm like, what the fuck, man?
They walked off the edge of the Earth.
We live in Idiocracy, the movie.
Yeah.
Officially. But researching this episode, I was a bit saddened to see how many of these characters have died, especially all the family, like all the moms and dads of Seinfeld. They're all dead, and it's pretty sad.
Well, they were old in the shows, so I'm not surprised, but
Yeah.
this
They
is
were.
sorry, edit out my coughing. I got like wrong tube action happening.
Yeah, that's the worst. I hate like drinking water and like, oh, down the wrong hole, like dying for a little
Why do we even have that like misfunction in our biology? Like, you should be able to not choke by just doing normal things like drinking or swallowing. It's
yeah,
about
don't.
that
Yeah, it doesn't
biology.
make any sense. Like maybe in 300 years, we will have evolved enough where we won't choke. like that part is gone. Like, all right, we don't need that anymore.
I would be happy with just one long tube and hole for everything. Like,
Yeah. Makes it
no
easier.
peeing, but different pipes go to different things. No, just one pipe.
That could be a revolution down the line, so. Awesome. All right, so I reckon we will get into our Masters of Our Horror Domain episode here. And yeah, I was gonna let you know for people listening that this might be your first time listening to this like sub-series here. We go about the whole series of Seinfeld. Like we're going season by season. We're doing season two now of Seinfeld and kind of connecting the dots between some of these actors and some of their like horror stuff they've been in, and the connection between Seinfeld and horror. There's a lot of connections there. So, and yeah, we're just going down the line. We're going to be doing each season, and right now it's season two, which I think is a it's a bit better to get more like cool connections with the first season and have that many episodes, and
Yeah, I think if you do like the 6 degree connection thing, you can go crazy off of any of the actors really, but I kind of did a mix of that this time. A little bit more direct though this time.
Yeah, and I went the opposite way of what I did from the first episode where I did the 6 degrees. At this time, I just kind of, I went through and picked out certain actors and actresses and stuff and just give me some connections to some of the horror movies they were in back in the day or whatever. So just I changed up a little bit. So I guess it evens out if you did some of the 6 degrees thing. So it evens
Yeah.
everything out.
Yeah. I'm glad we don't have any overlaps, so that's good. I was a little bit worried. I'm like, well, there's only so many character actors, but we did good.
Yeah, I'm glad you thought about the whole overlapping of characters because I totally forgot about that. So thank you. All
Wants
right.
to start?
What's that?
Who wants to start?
I guess I started off.
Okay.
All right. The first Seinfeld cast member I'm going to focus on is one of the most popular, one of my favorite, and that's Elaine, Julie Louise Dreyfus. She's in one of my childhood favorite horror movies, like fantasy horror movies, supernatural horror, whatever you want to call it. And that is 1986's Troll.
Nice.
Yeah. This has the first Harry Potter in there, played by Michael Moriarty, if you can
Oh,
remember that. Yeah. And it's got the dude from NeverEnding Story to, I think, Atreyu. He's in this as well. So this one kind of traumatized me a bit as a kid, though, man, because the trolls are really well done. And
You saw it as a kid?
what's that?
You saw it as a kid?
I did.
Wow.
It came out in, I'm sure I saw it as a rerun. It came out in 86, so I was only like one or two, but I did see it as a kid, yes. I saw it at a very young age as well. Like my grandma and my aunt would let me watch anything, and they mostly watched me when I was a kid, so I watch whatever I want to, and this is one of the films.
Oh my gosh,
Yeah.
that
Yeah, these trolls look really good. Even nowadays, I think they hold up pretty well with the practical stuff. And there's one scene in particular, like how they turn people into like that green vegetable stuff and then eat them. That totally
traumatizing.
fucked with me.
I didn't realize Charles Band is part of the cast for Troll.
Oh, I didn't know Charles Band was either. It's
Yeah,
okay.
looking at it.
I didn't
Interesting.
see that in there.
Yeah, 86 is when it came out. I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, but like of all like creatures, like mythical creatures that there are, and this is including like werewolves in and just everything. Like, trolls scare me the most of anything.
I agree with you there, yeah.
They're just so grody and gross. Like, even in, like, what was it, The Hobbit, where those trolls come out and they're like got them on a spigot and shit. I was just like, ugh, they're just disgusting, you know? And like the idea of them under the bridge, they just freak me out. So yeah, I think I'm the most scared of trolls of anything.
They're like the lowest tier when it comes to like monsters and cryptids. They're like down, they're way down low, you know. They're like the skeeziest of all of them, you know.
Skeezy is a good adjective for a troll. Yeah. You know that they probably smell like the worst thing you've ever smelled. And they're
Oh yeah.
just like nasty. Like, there's nothing like remotely cute about them or endearing. They're
No,
just like
they're
gross.
horrible.
I always thought that Hoggle in Labyrinth was disgusting too, even though he was kind of nice. I don't know if he was a troll, but ugh.
He looked like a troll. Yeah, he definitely looked like a troll. So, and yeah, he was weird looking. Not cute at all.
Not even close. If I met him and I was her, I'd be like, bye.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, I'm going the other way. You're good. I'm not trusting anything you tell me, troll.
Yeah, that's weird. So she played a woodland nymph.
Yeah, she played Jeanette, and I think she turned into like a woodland nymph type thing. I think she was in disguise or something, but
I
it
see.
was a decent sized role too, you know.
Yeah. A young Julia Louis-Dreyfus. How cute. She's doing some great work lately. She's still doing like a lot of like films like lately, you know, like some really good work. I keep seeing her pop up and
She did the
things.
Avengers movie too, right?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
Yeah.
she has a cool role in those. Yeah, that's right. So
Yeah,
glad she's still out there.
yeah, same here. I know she was like battling cancer for a bit, if I'm not mistaken, and I think she beat it, so that's
Oh.
cool.
I don't even remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's awesome. She's one of my favorite characters from Seinfeld. It's hard to choose one. You know, they're all so damn good and they all just like fit equally. I think, you know, Kramer is probably my favorite out of all of them, but I mean, they're all like right there in top tier, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I'd probably go with Costanza.
I like it. The older I get, the more I feel like Costanza. It's like super neurotic and stuff. And yeah, I get it. I mean, I get Costanza now. I didn't get him when I was a kid, but I do now as an adult, you know.
Yeah.
Another thing about trolls too, while we're talking about trolls, there's a episode of The Outer Limits, the reboot they did in I'm gonna say the late 90s, early 2000s. I don't know if you remember the reboot.
No. Of what?
Of the Outer Limits.
I only remember the reboot. I never saw any of the originals. So
Oh, okay,
yeah.
yeah. Where there's an episode on there that fucking fucked me up as a kid. It's a troll episode, and it starts off with like this kid in bed telling his asking his parents to come in and check for monsters. That's something I totally did, man. I thought shit was living in my closet, under my bed, all that stuff. But anyways, he has a teddy bear under the bed, and he hears something talking to him, like a voice, like, "Hey, come here, look under the bed, help me, I'm under the bed." And he looks under the bed. It's like his bear is under there, but the bear has red eyes. And then he's like, "Come help me!" And he reaches for his bear. And then on the other side of the bed, here comes a giant troll arm and grabs a kid and takes him under the fucking bed. I'm like, "Fuck me!" It killed me as a kid.
Oh my God.
Yeah, terrifying. Fucking trolls, man.
Would
But
you be
yeah.
more scared of a troll or the poltergeist clown trying to get you under the bed?
See, I don't fear clowns at all. Like, clowns are fine. Yeah, definitely trolls, 100%.
The poltergeist clown is pretty scary.
Oh, he is. He's creepy, but I don't know, man. Trolls went out, I think, for me. There's something about it. And also, growing up, another kid story, a lot of kid trauma going on with me, but, my aunt would have all these like porcelain clown dolls and all this other shit in the spare room that I would, when I was spending the night over there, I would sleep in there, and all these fucking dolls are around me, and there's clown ones, there's all kinds of ones. So if that tells you anything, it kind of broke my fear of clowns.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah.
I love that when Kramer is scared of a clown, that it's like Pavarotti episode or whatever.
Oh yeah, he's like
The clowns. Yeah.
Yeah, the way it says it's so childlike. It's like, all right, all the childhood fears right there are clown's form, you know? That's a great episode. All right, so that is my my first horror tie-in right there is with Elaine.
Okay. Elaine and Troll. All right. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to look at, let's see, episode 7, The Revenge. So that episode is when George quits his job because he's not allowed to use the executive toilet.
Oh, yeah.
But then he regrets it because he doesn't have any other job prospects. So Jerry says, George, just go back and act like he never quit. But that doesn't work. So as revenge, George decides to slip a Mickey into his drink by getting Elaine to flirt with him as a distraction. So more antics ensue from there. But yeah, the revenge. And the guy who plays George's boss, his name in real life is actor, his actor name, his actual name is Fred Applegate. Mm-hmm. So Fred Applegate is a television actor. He appeared in a lot of some of my personal favorites, such as Growing Pains and Night Court. He's done a ton of work. Mm-hmm. But the one I want to tie him to is he was in a show called Hooperman. And I don't know if you ever saw this show, but I remember seeing the show as a kid, and it was about this police detective in San Francisco named Harry Hooperman. And mm-hmm. Hooperman was played by John Ritter. And I love the show because it was just like a fun, I don't know, I don't want to say cool, but it was a good show to watch, like with your family. I don't know. Right. And he had this little Jack Terrier, Jack Russell Terrier called Bijou. And I just love that little dog. Anyways, John Ritter is who I'm tying Fred Applegate to, is 1 degree away from Seinfeld. So John Ritter, as you know, has been in Child's Play, Bride of Chucky, of course, It.
Mm-hmm.
And then a movie that I'd never heard of before called Terror Tract that came out in 2000. And I looked up Terror Tract and I was like, this sounds right up my alley. It's a horror comedy and an anthology film, which I love horror anthologies.
Like same here.
Very entertaining. So it came out in 2000. I looked around for it. I couldn't find it even on Tubi, but someone did upload it onto YouTube. So that was good.
Nice.
And so I watched it on YouTube. And incidentally, I just side mention is John Ritter. You know, as you know, he's passed away, but his son has been in a couple of horror films. And I think this is pretty funny. He was in the 2006 Wicker Man remake.
Oh, yeah.
As bar guy number 2. That goes to show you nepotism isn't always a thing, even with your name, Jason Ritter. And he was also in Freddy versus Jason as Will Rollins.
That's right. Yeah. Fun movie. Not great, but it's fun.
Exactly. Yeah. And it made me mad that neither of them really won. It was like...
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm still alive, bitch, or whatever. At the end, he's got a severed head. I'm like, God damn it, there's no real winner here. They both live.
Pick a side. I mean, I really wanted Freddy to win, but anyways.
I did too.
So anyway, about the film, it's a cool title. I really like Terror Tract. Like, I thought that was a cool title. I would probably have named it something else because what it's about is like John Ritter plays this real estate agent who is like, he's got to make like a sale that day for some like, you know, important sort of contest at work. But he's driving around this couple. And I think it's Peter DeLuise is playing the guy, like one of Dom DeLuise's sons is playing like the husband in the couple.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real estate agent driving this couple around a neighborhood, showing them different homes. But it's so funny because each home he's just like, yeah, isn't this great, look around, da, da, da. And they're looking around and he's like, oh, but this occurred, and he tells them this horrific story about something that occurred in the home where they're just like, what? No fucking way. Next, you know. So it's three like shorts basically with John Ritter talking about like each one in between, you know. And he's really great in it, like his line delivery. You know, he's always was such a great comedic actor.
Oh, yeah.
I wish he was still around today to see what he would have gone on to do. So it's pretty tragic to think about the loss of him. I put him there in the same kind of category as like a Bill Paxton's, like gone way too soon. And such a good an actor, you know.
Yeah, but, I grew up with him in Problem Child. You remember Problem Child?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I love Problem Child. Yeah. I love Problem Child. So funny. Yeah, and I loved him in It. I really liked his character in It. That was, he just, I would love to have seen him, you know, in more drama, I guess. But yeah, so what's another interesting thing is about Terror Tract is there are also two other Seinfeld actors in there. Like I said, it's a three-part anthology, and in the second story, the second story is titled Bobo, and I'll tell you about that in a minute, but it stars Bryan Cranston.
Oh, nice.
Great. And then the third one is called The Granny Killer, and it stars Brenda Strong, who, you know, was like that heiress, or, you know, the braless wonder.
for the candy fortune or whatever, yeah.
Yeah. I'm forgetting, Sue Ellen Mischke, right?
Yep, Sue Ellen Mischke.
So she was in the third one as the lead. So that was kind of cool to see, like, oh, okay, even though, you know, I'm basing it on John Ritter, who was related to Hooperman, related to Fred Applegate, I still found Bryan Cranston and Brenda Strong in this movie, Terror Tract. So I also recognize Rachel York, who I thought was in Seinfeld, but when I looked her up, she was in the first story. And when I looked her up, I realized, oh, no, I knew her from Frasier. You know, a lot of these actors went on to several different sitcoms in the 90s. And she played Officer Nasty in Frasier.
I also like Frasier a lot, the original series. I haven't watched the reboot. I'm like, I don't know about the reboot, but the original is so good.
It's not good. It doesn't have the same writers, so it's not clever, and it's just not good.
Yeah, I figured that.
I watched a few, and I was like, no, thank you, I'm done. Okay, but anyway, Terror Tract, it's, you know, I really, really liked it a lot. I'm surprised not more people know about it or hear about it. I don't know why. And it's kind of that strange era where it feels more 90s than it is, you know, because it's the year 2000 when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's definitely something I would recommend if you like horror comedies, if you like horror anthology stuff like Creepshow, then it's really entertaining and fun. And each story was actually pretty like tense, you know, like had me stressing out. I was like, oh no. This one reminded me a little bit of Gerald's Game. And it was pretty they're all brutal and none of them end happily. But then they cut back to John Ritter just being like, yeah, you know, like kind of commenting on it, like, oh wow, I'm surprised they patched up that hole, you know, stuff like that. but yeah, what I was going to tell you about is the second one with Bryan Cranston. And we know Bryan Cranston from Seinfeld. What is his name?
Watley.
Yeah, Tim Watley, the dentist. He's so great. But yeah, it's weird. It's a really weird little story about this family. This, you know, a mom, a dad in like the suburbs, and their little girl who's around like 6 or 7 years old. And just the story starts out with her, like, you can see that the love he has for his daughter is very like sweet and special. And she's outside playing and she comes in and she tells her parents, I just found a little monkey in a red suit. And they're like, okay. They think she's like, you know, got an imaginary friend, but it turns out there really is, for whatever reason, this little monkey out there in like an organ grinder outfit.
Oh, creepy.
And yeah, and I'm like, is this the same monkey in like Monkey Shines? Because it's like one of those capuchin monkeys, and I wondered, like, I don't know, I think Monkey Shines actually came out like way earlier.
Yeah.
Or the same monkey in your favorite show, Friends. I don't know, Marcel.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that stupid, yeah, not stupid monkey. It was, you know, it's all right, but yeah.
That little sweet monkey. Anyway, yeah, I'm sure there's lots of capuchin monkeys in showbiz, but. So she names him Bobo. It was just a weird, ridiculous, but brutal story about, like, basically the monkey is kind of evil and Bryan Cranston is like battling it throughout the whole thing. It's so crazy. But yeah, and the third story with Brenda Strong is really cool. Like, I would actually like to see a whole film out of it, but it was like this dude who keeps having like these psychic visions of what is referred to as the Granny Killer. And it's like some serial killer on the loose. It's a man who's dressed like a granny, like with an old lady mask and like gray wig. And he has like a cleaver and he goes around killing women, but he's like, you know, he comes up to them from behind and after chasing them with his cleaver. And he's just like, don't worry, it's just granny, and like slashes them to death. It's so weird. But there's something kind of cool about that. You know, I don't know. I think it could have been a good like character, the granny killer. But yeah, it's basically that he keeps having visions of what the victims saw and felt. And he's worried that it might be him. So there were three really good stories. The first one reminded me of in Creepshow. Remember the one with Ted Danson? So it's like one of those like revenge stories when there's two lovers and, you know, but yeah, like I said, they're all pretty brutal. So I definitely recommend checking it out. I'm really happy that I was led to this movie, this gem.
Yeah, because I've never even heard of it before. I just added it in my watch list. I'm like, I've never seen this.
Yeah, let me know what you think of it. But yeah, I think Terror Track should just be on Cavity Killer's t-shirts and people should know about it.
Yeah, that'd be a good one, yeah. Or Fright Rags.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make my own.
TeePublic. Use TeePublic. They're great so far.
That would be such a deep cut, walking around at like a horror convention with a Terror Track tee.
Super deep. You know there's got to be like a cult following for it somewhere. So
I don't know. If there is, I'm going to be the founder.
Yeah, you're the founder of the cult.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there is more of a following of it, but it seems like I just never have seen any merchandise or heard of it or anything before. So, but yeah. Same. That's my
good find.
Thanks. That's my first episode coverage.
Nice. That was a good one. For my my next Seinfeld horror related stuff is going to be from season 2 episode 1, The Ex-Girlfriend, and it's going to be Tracy Colas, who plays Marlene. Remember Marlene?
Marlene, yeah.
Yeah. All right, her horror connection comes from a lot of this stuff's going to go back to like childhood favorites of mine, just because, you know, it's going back in the day a bit. But she was in an episode of Tales from the Dark Side, the TV show.
Marlene, yeah. That's the one that was like, Jerry, I just don't know, son.
Yeah, one of the worst characters ever on Seinfeld.
I still can't stand her.
Oh, yeah, same here.
All right, yeah, so Tales of the Dark Side, cool.
Yeah, she's tied in with that. And Tales from the Dark Side is another show that I was also exposed to from my grandma and my aunt. Like, they're the ones that got me into horror, so I mention them a lot because I was free-brained on anything, watching stuff.
You know? I remember laying on did you ever do this as a kid where you put a pillow in front of the TV and you lay on the floor so you're close to it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had this big ass pillow I would do that with, and Tales from the Dark Side would come on like pretty late at night on Friday nights. That and Friday the 13th series.
Oh yeah, also really fucking good.
Oh good. But yeah, I just the opening of Tales from the Dark Side always creeped me out. That black and white change with the trees.
Oh yeah, and it's all just disintegrates. It's like Tales from the Dark Side. Yeah. And, you know, starts off nice and bright, and like, you know,
yeah.
There's everything's bright and shiny in the daytime, but there's a dark side. Like this, I'm like, oh man, I still love that. And like, gives me chills when it comes on, like if I'm rewatching it or something.
Yeah, you're like, ooh, this is gonna be good.
Yeah, fucking great show, and it's cool she was part of it. I was trying to find what name she used for the episode, but she was a very like minor character in one of the Tales from the Dark Side episodes. But, you know, still cool she was involved in it, you know, because to me it's one of, besides like Tales from the Crypt, Friday the 13th, the series, like, and Monsters, the series is another good one. Like, these are like fucking this gems of, you know, horror anthologies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, definitely. I love horror anthologies.
Yeah.
I wish, like, I kind of dropped off watching the Shudder Creep Show. I think I'm caught up, but the last one I was just like,
Yeah. Yeah. They're really hit and miss. The first one of the new season with, like, the monster that was, you know, knocking on the lady's door or whatever, saying, you know, let me in. Oh, well, I'm sorry, it was a girl who was being chased by a monster. That episode was really cool.
There were several that were really good. My favorite was probably the one with the little girl in the dollhouse, the head of
Oh,
home or
yeah.
whatever. Oh my God, that was so good. I think they need to, like, go ahead and let a bunch of other directors do them, not all Greg Nicotero, because he's not a great director.
Yeah, but he's a hell of a special effects man, that's for sure.
Absolutely, him and his team. I
Oh, yeah.
love what they did. Like, their zombie work is incredible.
Yeah, and they've been a part of like almost every horror movie we've ever watched. K&B somewhere on there, which is nuts.
So props to that, but not everybody can direct.
No. And
It's a
he's trying to do
skill.
everything. He's doing effects, he's directing us a lot, you know?
Yeah, that is too much.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I got to see him do a panel last year with it was
Cool.
Greg Nicotero and Bill Moseley and Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw 2. I can't remember his name off the top of my head right now, but he did a panel. And yeah,
Interesting.
that was really cool.
Nice.
Yeah,
Was it
he
at a
seems.
convention or
Yeah, I was at the Spooky Empire convention last year.
where is that at?
This one was in Florida. And it's
Oh,
usually
okay.
in Florida, but this year they're expanding and they're going to have one actually here, which like 20 miles from me, if that. So in my
Really?
hometown, yeah, I'm like, this is the first time they're
Great.
doing it here. But it's Spooky Empire is really, really big, and it's one of the best horror conventions that I know about and stuff. And they never have any like crazy drama going on, with
Oh, yeah.
actors who shouldn't be there and all that kind of
Right.
shit,
Exactly. You
Yeah,
should do a booth there.
I would love to, but I don't know what's involved in all that. It's like
Yeah, you
I
could just
don't
look up the organizer and message him or something. I don't know.
yeah,
Just
I've
wait
been.
to do it and don't tell anybody.
Yeah, I just pull up there. Yeah, but I made some good contacts from the Spooky Empire. A lot of cool people, and
Great.
that's where I got the Bill Moseley picture with last year. That was at Spooky Empire. Yeah,
Cool.
so I still want him on the show.
Yeah.
I've gotten in contact with his agent and stuff, and he sent me an
Great.
email before at Bill Moseley himself. He's like, "Well, you got to talk to my agent," and I think his agent's his wife, I believe. I'm not 100% sure on that, but at the time, this was years ago when I first started the podcast, and they said they couldn't do it at this time. So I'm warming him up still. I'm gonna hit him up again eventually, and hopefully this time we get him on there. Because from what I hear, he doesn't really like doing podcasts. Because I
Sure.
think he gets asked the same goddamn questions over and over, the
Sure.
same bullshit. I'm like, I totally won't do that. We'll talk about fucking heavy metal or something. He's a metalhead, so
Oh,
I
yeah.
go, all over the place. I'm gonna ask you a bunch of dumbass questions.
I'm excited about the Christopher Reeve episode. I'm going to listen to that for sure.
Yeah, that's gonna be not this month. This Monday I have a different one coming out, but it's gonna be probably in 2 or 3 weeks I have that one out.
Cool.
Yeah, he was super cool, and yeah, he digs my music, which is cool. Both bands, my metal and my synth stuff. So he sent me a text back saying he really dug it. He was using my heavy metal stuff for his leg day, so I'm like, that's perfect.
Hey, that'd be such an honor. You're like, wow, Headhunter is working out to my music.
Yeah, I was like, that's fucking cool as hell. So yeah, Headhunter lives up to all the hype. He's a really cool dude, and we're
Nice.
definitely gonna stay in touch and all. So.
Good. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Does he where does he live?
He
He's
lives
like
in Norway.
he's okay, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. His
I see
time
he
zone is way off from what my time zone is, so we had to like figure what the hell was gonna work out for us. Like that, we're
Yeah.
not like 1 in the morning doing this podcast, so but we eventually figured it out.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, so we're on to your Seinfeld character now.
Oh, is it my turn again? Okay,
Yeah.
wow. Let's go with episode 9, The Deal. So that episode is when Jerry and Elaine think that they've found a way to start being intimate again, while just remaining friends. But you can't just be friends and have sex. So they realize that it's too problematic, and they almost stop being friends, because they're just like, well, I guess that it's not gonna work out since you can't deal with it. So one thing I always thought was weird about the episode is that when it ends, they're like happy and they're just like, oh, a little of this, a little of that, and the other. And they got back together at the end of that episode.
Yeah,
But
and the
it drops, right? You never hear about it again.
nope.
And you're just like, what the heck happened? You know, like I thought they were together, and that only happens one time, and then it's as if it never happened. And I was reading about it. It's because the network was pushing for them to be a couple, but Larry David didn't want that at all. And thought that there would not be a third season. So that episode was actually supposed to be the final episode with like a happy ending. But then later they got a contract to do a third season. And since he didn't want to go and follow that storyline, it just got dropped. So that's what that was. And it was kind of like out of order from there on. So yeah, that's why they didn't follow that storyline, which
That's
is good
crazy.
because there's so much more potential to follow, like them dating other people, and that dynamic is more interesting.
Yeah, we would never we would have had a Putty if this would have happened, you know. And Putty's
Yeah,
like an awesome
Sparky.
character.
And all of Jerry's girlfriends, all the different actors they had on there for girlfriends. And you know, you want to see those dating episodes. They're fun. So anyway, in this episode 9, The Deal, I think I pronounced her name right, Siobhan Fallon Hogan,
Sounds right.
plays Tina. And so Tina is also like Elaine's roommate and also dates Kramer at one time. Remember when they play like that jungle music and they fall on the glass table? But yeah, she's a really cool, like funny, interesting, comedic sort of actor. And anyway, I totally forgot she was in the film. This is where I tie her directly into what I think is a horror film, although it's a genre-bending horror film called The House That Jack Built,
Oh,
directed
hell
by
yeah.
Lars von Trier. And I love Lars von Trier films. It kind of reminds me of like, you know, he did like Nymphomaniac volumes 1 and 2, Antichrist. And he reminds me kind of like with Gaspar Noé. It's like these aren't like straight up horror films, like, but they're like dramatic, surrealist films with heavy elements of horror. So definitely The House That Jack Built is more leaning on horror. It's just like it's a serial killer film. But yeah, I saw it at the Loft when it came out with some friends, and I really enjoyed the satirical elements in it. Like you were saying earlier, we live in Idiocracy. It's kind of got that feel, you know, where you can see where it's kind of like tying in MAGA and Trump, and Matt Dillon was awesome in it. I hadn't seen Matt Dillon in anything in ages, and so it was cool to see him as a lead in this like cool role, like kind of an American Psycho role. But yeah, I was looking up some little factoids on the film. It had its world premiere in at Cannes in 2018, and of course, many people walked out.
Oh, I'm sure I heard about
Yeah,
that.
although it also had a 6-minute standing ovation, so polarizing. I would have been there with the standing ovation.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, some of the audience members were upset, and didn't like the extreme violence and nihilistic tone. But you know, it's a cool plot. I always thought it was, you know, when I heard about it, I'm like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. And it was real well executed, almost anthology style, showing Matt Dillon, you know, talk about his various kills. But yeah, she's in it playing Claire Miller, or Lady Two. And one of the taglines for The House That Jack Built I thought was cool was, if you feel like screaming, you definitely should.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, that's a great film. I dig everything he does, and with
Yeah.
the house that Jack built too. Like, it's super extreme, it's super dark and everything, but there's like a, you know, there's that humor to it as well, like the dark humor. So it's not like you don't feel super dirty after watching it. Like, there's a really good film that I can only watch once. It was the Golden Glove. Have you seen that one?
No,
Oh
what's that?
fuck. All right, I'll send you the link to it. I think it's called The Golden Glove. I'm pretty sure that's the name of it, but it's another like serial killer thriller horror movie, I guess. I would put it in the horror genre, but it's this film like dark. It's really grimy and fucking, it just feels nasty. Everybody in the film, they all look like there's something up with them, you know, they're not quite right. And you just feel like you need a shower when you get done watching. There's some really fucked up scenes in it as well too.
Kind of feel like Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer.
Yes, and that, yes, definitely feels like that. That's perfect. Yeah. So if you can handle that, you can handle this. I think The Golden Glove is a bit more extreme, though, because with Henry, the Portrait of Serial Killer, they, you know, a lot of stuff was off screen. But with this one, it's a lot of the stuff is on screen, and it's pretty fucked up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just looking at it now. So it's fairly new, 2019. Mm-hmm. Is it German?
It's definitely foreign, but I can't remember if it's German or not. I think it is. Mm-hmm. Very good movie, though. Check it out. But it's a one and done for most people. I don't think you'll be watching it again. So.
Yeah, that would not be healthy to watch it more than once. I see it's on Tubi, so I think I will check it out maybe tonight. All right,
just be prepared. Like, have a follow-up movie, something like Ernest Halloween movie or something funny that you can get yourself out of it. Yeah, do Seinfeld right after it, because you're going to feel like shit when you get done with it.
That's totally my palate cleanser, yeah.
There you go. All right, so I'm going to be focusing on one of my favorite side characters, and that's going to be Uncle Leo. Yay. Lynn Lesser is cool. Awesome. Yeah. I got two films I'm going to tie him in. I'm not sorry. Two series I'm going to tie him in with, and that's going to be The Munsters, the original Munster series from 1966. He played Manico on there. I don't know if you remember that or not. I vaguely remember him being on there.
I do not. What kind of character was he?
You know what? I can't find any pictures. I just
that's weird.
Yeah. So it's out there as Manico, but I'm like, I don't remember him. He says that's what he was, but I'm like, where the hell's the pictures at?
Manico.
Yeah. So I need to do a further research and find the actual pictures from that. But I love the fucking original Munsters. Fucking so good. I know they ended up doing like some color episodes, which I don't know. I just felt like those kind of lost the charm of the original black and white ones, but but I really dig that. But also Uncle Leo was in let me see here. Is it the same thing that was in? Hold on one second. Oh, he was in Kojak the Night Stalker, the series.
Ah.
Yeah. I don't know if you were a fan of that or not, but I was. That was like Nick at Night type stuff back when I was a kid.
I've actually been recommended to that show more than a few times. So, but I don't know why. I don't know if I was not living in the States at the time, but I totally missed all of that.
Wow.
Just to backtrack a minute to the Munsters. So that I remember that episode, and you might as well, if you look up like the Munsters, Uncle Leo, it'll take you to an image where he played a Native American. It so wouldn't happen these days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But he's dressed like total, like back in the day when they would do ridiculous Native American costumes.
Oh, no. No wonder I couldn't find him on here. Let's see.
Funny, because it reminds me of the episode where they have that woman that Jerry is interested in, but he has a cigar store Indian and she's all offended. Naomi.
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, God.
Kind of like in that vein. How hilarious.
Oh, man. Anyway, that's crazy.
Kojak, the Night Stalker. I guess, like, when did it come out again? Like late 80s?
I think 70s, and it rolled into the 80s, I believe.
Okay. Did you just watch it like kind of like reruns, like Twilight?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because it came on like, back when we had cable for a little bit of a time when I was a kid, we didn't have cable. Like, there's only like a couple months out of the year we had cable. Anyways, we do like Nick at Night when they had like all the cool old shows on. It'd be like that, the Munsters. But I think Kojak was on like another station, but we'd watch all that together and stuff. And yeah, really cold, fucking good.
Great. Cold Shack.
Yeah, Kojak.
Not Cold Jack.
Yeah, because there's another one called Kojak. The detective or whatever, and that's the ball-headed fellow. That's the one you don't want.
Other way around.
Kojak. Yeah.
No, other way around. Kojak.
Oh, it is?
Is Telly Savalas, the bald guy. We were talking about Kolchak.
There you go. Yes, Kojak. There you go. That's so confusing. Like, how the hell do these two exist around the same time? That's way confusing.
Kojak and Kojak.
Yeah. That's super confusing.
Detective? A reporter? Okay, Kolchak is a reporter.
Kojak, yes, that's the one.
Was a detective.
Yeah, man, that's confusing.
So it looks cool. It looks good. I need to find it. Let's see. Looks like it's on Peacock.
I was about to say that. Yeah, it's on Peacock. Oh. So, and it looks good too. Like the transfer and all looks really, it looks good. Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. That's a fun one to get into. Like it's really dark episodes. I mean, there's a lot of like, there's some comedic stuff on top of there, but it gets pretty dark. It's like their version, kind of like the X-Files sort of, like each episode is like a different creature or, you know, killer. So.
Cool. Yeah. That's a good. And so you tied Uncle Leo into one of them.
Yeah. He's into Kojak. I can't find the name of the character he was in there. So
he could be a Kojak character.
Oh, definitely.
I'm about to open a Coke Zero.
There you go. That, yeah.
No affiliation.
It's one of my favorites.
Is it really?
Oh yeah. I love all the zero sodas because I don't drink sugar sodas or anything. So I do Coke Zero, Mountain Dew Zero now. Cause they just, I was like, oh, they have a Mountain Dew Zero. I'm like, no shit. Mellow Yellow Zero. Pepper? Like they all taste great.
Dr. Pepper Zero.
Yep. So tastes good. Great. Yeah. I think they're lying to us. I'm pretty sure they have sugar in them. I'm like, how the hell do you taste almost just like fucking regular soda? I don't get it.
Yeah.
Don't get it. But there was another movie, too, I was going to tie Uncle Leo in. He was in a movie from 1977 that I've never seen before called Ruby.
Ruby. Okay.
Yeah. It's the synopsis of it says 16 years after Ruby Claire's gangster boyfriend was shot and killed by four associates, a series of gruesome murders take place at a drive-in movie theater she now owns. Meanwhile, the behavior of her mute daughter Leslie is becoming increasingly strange and visiting psychics claim that the forces beyond are out for revenge. So it looks pretty interesting. I've never heard of this one. He played he didn't play a main character in this. He played a guy named Barney in this one. So might be something to look into. It's from 77. I'm sure YouTube has it.
For sure. Yeah. I feel like you can find anything on there.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Those are good finds.
Yeah, I think so. I think Uncle Leo is pretty fucking interesting.
He's so weird. I love that one where she has Elaine draws eyebrows on him and the doctor's like, whoa, calm down.
Yeah, so what do you mean I am calm? Whoa. Yeah, that's a really good episode.
When he steals a book from that bookstore.
Swarm, yeah. We're going to make him they're going to make an example out of him or something.
Yeah.
That's a thing old people do is steal from the bookstore, but I don't never see any real old people at the bookstore. But
no. Or what about when they show him as like the Cape Fear character? Holy shit.
Oh, that's a great one. Yeah. He's got the tattoos on his knuckles and all too. Yeah.
Hello. Yeah.
Hello. God damn, Uncle Leo. He could have played, he would have made a good Grandpa Munster. He's got like that body, you know?
Yeah. Face. Yeah. Yeah.
But no, they made him some bullshit ass character. They could have totally utilized him as like something cool, but
yeah, definitely.
All right. So now we're on to your turn.
All right. Let's see. I have three left. I'm going to go with episode 8, The Heart Attack.
Mm.
And so this is an episode where George and Kramer and Jerry meet up with Tor Ekman. He's a holistic teacher.
Oh, yeah.
You remember this episode? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
There's actually a Friends episode where there's a similar character, but we won't talk about that. Anyway, the Ekman is played by actor Stephen Tobolowsky. Tobolowsky. How would you say that? Tobolowsky.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah. I'm horrible with last name, so that sounds good.
And this character Ekman performs a number of hand gestures to identify what's wrong with George. And then he concludes it has nothing to do with, he has tonsillitis at the time. But it's an imbalance with his nature. You know, he's all this metaphysical dude. So he makes a tea out of cramp bark and, couch grass, whatever that is.
Yeah.
And George sips it and he ends up turning like beat ass purple as an allergic reaction and then ends up going back to the hospital. It was funny. I saw this episode just not the other day, you know, like recently. And it's just so funny how purple he is. Like they just made him look like a total grape, you know, in that episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, Stephen Tobolowsky He's still working as an actor. He's actually in a few upcoming productions, and he's been in a ton of films and shows since the 1970s. Not a lot of horror, except for this Diamond in the Rough, where he made his film debut at a young age, where he still had all his hair, in 1977. And the movie is called Keep My Grave Open, which is a badass title, but is not a badass movie.
Damn.
It's about, quote, a crazy woman who lives in an old mansion and thinks she's with her boyfriend slash lover, or her brother slash lover, who lures victims to her.
Mm.
So very sort of psycho, you know, is she imagining somebody behind the door? And she's just like talking to someone named Kevin, you know, in his room. And there's weird scenes where she's just like arguing with him and there's no one talking back. And a scene where she decides to be very seductive. And she, you know, in the 70s, ideas of seduction where you put on your lingerie and your full blown makeup, and then for whatever reason, you put on a big ass robe with feathers.
Oh yeah.
Like a fucking crow.
Yeah. You know, like bird seduction, I guess. You want to look as much as a bird as you can.
It's like a fucking crow. And like, did men find that like hot, where they're just like, oh, she's got on her long robe, you know? And so she comes in all like trying, but it's so funny because it's like, it's actually like directed pretty well. Like, I don't know the director, but like he did a good job of like showing good, like they chose good shots. That's all. It's something I can say about this film that's positive. It's like it's not badly directed, and there's good, interesting shot compositions, and it's edited well. But interesting shot compositions, meaning like at one point she checks her mail and they decide to like show the point of view as looking through the mailbox at the person working in the mail office at the other side, you know? And so it's kind of weird and eerie. And then, but when she's seducing her brother slash lover, Kevin, which, you know, I think there's been more than one horror film where there's that kind of relationship, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But she goes into the room and it's all like that angle where it's from the camera's point of view. So you're like Kevin watching her trying to seduce you. And she makes these weird ass faces and like, you see like the camera kind of moving in and out, you know, and she's like, oh, and then it moves away and she's like, no. So you're like, you're like this guy who's getting seduced by your weirdo sister for a bit. Anyway, it was on Tubi, and you know what, another kind of Seinfeld tie, other than Stephen Tobolowsky having a major role in the film, is that it looks exactly like a bootleg copy. Like, I can just totally imagine like that bootleg dude recorded this copy and it ends up on Tubi. It looks so bad. It's super dark, super grainy, and the audio is absolutely terrible.
Oh shit.
Just terrible image quality, but it adds to it. You know what I mean? Watching some weird old 70s horror film to feel like you're, you know, looking at it and it's in the theater almost through it, like a, I don't know, just a bad quality was kind of, it kind of adds to the creepiness of it. And so does the score. I just burped Coke Zero. Sorry. But there's like weird 70s score music with like bongos and shit, you know, and it just never lets up. So that was kind of jarring. But Stephen Tobolowsky plays this guy who for some reason just like really wants to take care of the main lady, the crazy lady's horse. She has a horse named Caesar. And he just is like, has this scheme to where he's like, I'm going to definitely take care of the horse. And like, he asks her for permission to please let me ride your horse, Caesar. And she's like, maybe we'll see. I don't know.
Wow. Weird.
Why is this a side story? Who knows? But in the meantime, there is a killer going around with a sword. And this dude goes around with a sword, just like randomly killing people. So there's this other side story, you know? So you get the sense of like, yeah, this is going to be her, who's like this psycho, basically a psycho character, meaning the film Psycho, where it's like she's also Kevin and this killer, you know? And that's kind of where it ends up being, you know, it's not a surprise, but, I don't know if that's a spoiler alert, like who's going to watch this. I don't know. But, so anyways, weirdo scenes with her, like I said, yelling at, arguing with, begging or seducing Kevin, who's not there. Dangerous guy in a hat who was apparently Kevin with a sword killing people and collecting their bodies. And, Stephen Tobolowsky is this young guy who just wants to ride the horse. His name is Robert. And the lady's name, by the way, is he calls her Miss Fontaine. Anyway, there's a scene where just to like wrap this segment about this movie up, where he like, it's like almost three fourths of the way of the movie, he comes to ask her again, like, you said I could ride your horse. And she's just like, I don't know, maybe, and brings him in like she wants to seduce him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the actual motive is she wants to kill him. She slash Kevin wants to kill him. And I sent you that clip where she's trying to seduce him and he's like apprehensive. But it looks like a blooper.
Yeah.
Because she's like, I want to take a shower with you. And he's like, me? And he starts cracking up laughing. But it looks like they just went with it. It's kind of funny. It's cute in a way. But, you know, she does kill him in the guise of Kevin. There's also a prostitute named Twinkle that Robert has gone to see that for whatever reason she kills as well. But it's really funny. One of his lines when he shows up at her house is, you know, as it's clear that she gives him some bourbon and lures him upstairs and he doesn't really want to go, he says to himself, I'm doing this for you, Caesar. Whoa. Yeah. So anyway, I don't recommend Keep My Grave Open.
Sounds horrible.
but I also don't, regret watching it.
That's good.
So there you go.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna avoid that movie, but you told me everything I need to know about that one, so I feel pretty good, you know.
Yeah, there's some funny gems that weren't necessarily funny. I'm doing this for you, Caesar, is one of them.
That's definitely a hidden movie. I wouldn't call it a hidden gem, that's for sure. But it's a hidden movie for a reason, probably.
It's a movie for sure.
All right. So the character I'm going to focus on this one is going to be the great Barney Martin, who played Morty, Seinfeld's dad. Great. And he's my favorite Morty. I know they had the different character playing him. What's that?
Yeah, they had one earlier Morty.
Yeah, he was scary looking. Like he kind of like, I don't know. He kind of like it was straight out of a horror movie. Like I'm just rewatching the whole season once again right now, and seeing season one again with him was like, yeah, he's a little off.
Yeah,
he's definitely not lovable like you know, Barney is. So
totally.
Yeah, they made the right decision there.
Number one dad.
Yeah, number one dad. And so his horror tie, and he's got a few things here. Also series. A lot of these are series I found, you know, the horror tie in with most of these characters. But he was in the episode called Dealer's Choice of the Twilight Zone, the series that came out. This is, I guess, their first reboot, which is from 1985 to 1989. So he wasn't in the original Twilight Zone, but he was in an episode called Dealers on there.
That's when I was familiar with Twilight Zone. Same with Outer Limits. I didn't watch the black and whites. I did watch the 80s. So I definitely saw this one.
Let's go Dealer's Choice. I'm sorry, not Dealers. My notes went off the other side. So yeah, Dealer's Choice was the name of the episode, and he was in that. And I do remember the 80s Twilight Zone, but not near as much as I remember the black and white Twilight Zone. So I've watched almost all the originals. I don't really remember the ones from the 80s. So I don't know if it's good enough to go back and try to find
really
some episodes. Yeah, I haven't. Okay, I need to check those 80s ones out. And I know they did a Twilight Zone in the late 90s, I think it was. And they came back with a few things. I think Forrest Whitaker hosted it. You remember that?
Actually, no.
You're not missing much. And then they did another reboot with Jordan Peele that was on Amazon, which was it was all right, I guess.
Insert gaseous noise here.
But yeah, he was in the 85 Twilight Zone. He was also in the Alfred Hitchcock Hour from 62 to 1965. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So he's like kind of a old veteran of, you know, horror mystery type stuff. You know, not strictly horror, but he definitely falls in line with that stuff.
That's cool. You know, the 80s Twilight Zone, there's one episode that always stuck with me. I saw it as a kid, you know, in the 80s. And it was this one where this woman, I think she found a watch, but she, with this object, was now able to stop time whenever she wanted. Like, she discovers it because, like, her family is going nuts and arguing and screaming and yelling at the kitchen table. You know, it's just chaos. And she's just like, she yells, like, stop, or, you know, whatever. And everything stops. And she's like, oh, her whole family freezes, all of time stops. And she spends like a nice day by herself in peace and quiet. And then turns everything back on. And she realizes she has this ability through what she found, you know. But what's really the creepy part is at the end of the episode, a nuclear bomb has been launched to the United States. And it's so scary, you know, because everybody's like freaking out and screaming. You can see it flying through the sky and about to land and detonate. And she stops time, but then she can never start it again.
Wow. Yeah, that's totally fucking scary. That, yeah, so super scary. Nightmare stuff. Yeah.
Totally. Wow. Yeah.
I'm sure I've seen some episodes. That one doesn't ring a bell with me, but I'll definitely look into those. That sounds really fucked up.
Yeah. Go back and watch those, and then I'll watch Kolchak.
Yeah. And yeah, we can report back and, you know, see what we both think of these series that we missed.
Yeah.
There's still so much stuff out there to watch. Like, you think you watched everything, you're not even close.
I know.
It's never ending.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, number one dad, the best Morty. You know, yeah, he was the best. And his episodes are always fucking good. One of my favorite Morty episodes was, I don't know what season was in off the top of my head, but it was the episode where he was like exercising in front of Kramer's door. He's got his little device attached to the doorknob. Kramer thinks there's somebody breaking in, I think. And that's when he was like dating Sarah Silverman's character in that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was fucking hilarious. I eat a plum every morning. It totally reminds me of my dad. My dad's all into, like, he still works out and stuff, but he uses mostly like bands and all that stuff now instead of actual weights. Yeah. So every time I see him, he tells me how good these bands are. I'm like, yeah, you already told me about that, Dad, but yeah, they're great.
Is he talking about the TRX like I am?
He's talking about, he's just got some like Amazon like resistance bands that he uses.
Yeah. And I got sold into buying the expensive TRX band. I'm sure it's exactly the same.
Have you tried those yet?
No.
Still in the box?
Maybe. I'll get to it.
They work. I mean, I don't know about the I bought the cheap ones off Amazon, but bad thing is I've already busted most of the bands.
Oh,
and
shit.
Yeah, and it fucking hurts when they break. I had one pop me in the back of my head. I was doing like some tricep stuff with one, and it decided to pop on me.
Oh, see, this is why I guess TRX is more expensive. They're like hardcore resistance. So
yeah, these ones are made out of like I don't know, it's like the shit like I don't like gloves are made out of. I don't know. It's cheap stuff.
I had those too, but you know what? They would pick up a shitload of cat hair too.
Oh, fuck crazy. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Oh,
yeah. No, I don't like that. There's cat hair everywhere in his house, especially with Cass being that he's a long hair.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. There's so much. Yeah. He's like a wolf. I mean, he's supposed to be what we think he is. He's either a Russian long hair or a Siberian long hair, or there's a chance he could be a Maine Coon, possibly. We can't tell yet. It's hard because those three cats all look alike, and their traits are really similar, so we don't really know yet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a surprise.
Have you heard of the Lycoi breed of cats?
Is that the werewolf cats?
Yes, I want one so bad. They're so freaking cool and adorable, and it's like they're just – they're so unique. You know, I love interesting, weird looking cats.
Yeah, those are cool. We wanted one.
Yeah.
I think they're expensive as hell, too.
I bet they are. Yeah.
Yeah.
Myla is an Abyssinian. She's like a $500 cat. I was lucky enough to find a Sphinx at the Humane Society when I had my other Smyrna. But yeah, it's probably expensive. I don't even know if there's like people that have Lycoys in Tucson or whatever, but you know, people give shit also about getting like specific breeds. Like, there's so many cats at the shelter. I'm like, yeah, I know. I've also gotten shelter cats. Like, I have all cats. Give me a break. Okay. They're alive. Yeah. That's off.
You were lucky. We got cats off of Facebook. There's a pet group on there. If people like have a litter of cats or dogs or whatever, and they're trying to give them homes, or they need to give them homes for good reasons. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got cats off of. I think we got him for, I think we paid like a $20 deposit for the lady. Wouldn't like get rid of him, because as soon as we saw the picture, like, that's our cat, we got to get him. So I think we just paid a deposit to keep him, but it was free. I'm like, yeah. She just going to take care of him anymore. She's about to have a baby and she's already got two other cats. And it's like, you know, you don't. Yeah. So I can't take care of all these cats. So that's how we got Cass. But when we got him, he was only, I think, 3 or 4 weeks old. So he's actually too young to be with us. But we didn't know that. She told us he was 6 weeks. But the vet's like, no, he's younger than that. He should still be with his mom. So he was tiny when we got him.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that, you know, he was found a good home and you guys were able to like nurture him to. Even at that young age. Yeah. I got Mila just at 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Cass is super, super, super spoiled.
Is he getting big?
What's that?
Getting big.
Oh yeah. I mean, from the pictures from when he was just a teeny little thing, like fit in your hand. Now he's like fucking a full grown cat, but he's not done growing yet. Yeah. If he's a Maine Coon, they said up to like 20 pounds. If he's a Russian long hair, I think he is, he's going to be 15 to 20 pounds. So he has really big ass paws too. They say cats grow into their paws. So if he gets as big as his paws are, he's going to be big.
Wow.
That's but he's cool. Still like, he meeps. He doesn't meow. He makes all these weird like bird noises. And it's like, he doesn't meow. It's just weird. And that's supposedly a trait of the Russian long hair. So.
Interesting. Yeah,
they're cool. Highly intelligent too is another trait they have, like super smart. And I totally get that, because he takes all our shit and hides under beds everywhere. Like, there's hair ties, he fucking loves those. He's got them all over the house.
Oh yeah, my little hair ties. She's so cute. She'll take a hair tie and then put it in her food bowl and like get back to it later, but she fetches with them. She's always fetched with them.
Oh yeah, really cool. Lily used to do that stuff too when she was younger, but now she's older and she just likes to chill and watch TV. So our black cat Lily, but she's like 13 or 14 now.
Oh yeah, Mila's 11.
11.
Yeah.
And Cass is not even a year yet. He's like 7 months.
I love that kitten energy.
Oh yeah, he's got plenty of it. Holy shit, he gets like the zoomies, I guess, at nighttime. Starts fucking running and jumping on shit. He tried to pull down my I have a medieval weapon hanging on the wall downstairs. It's a, what is it called? It's like a mace, but it's on a chain. A morning star. I have one of those hanging on the wall down there, and it's way up in the air. I was like, there's no way he can reach that. Oh, he can fucking reach it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And that's hanging on the neighbor's side of the wall, too. So when he jumps up, it bangs against the wall. So it's perfect.
This is, what was that noise? You don't want to know.
It's a morning star.
That my cat flung.
Yeah. He could probably use it. He's strong too. He's been dragging some stuff down. We didn't think he can drag down from upstairs. Like he's pretty strong.
I love that. So cute.
But he stays out the podcast room. I can't have him in here right now because he gets underneath my desk and just wraps himself in cables like it's funny. And you can't do shit about it. You can like tell him no when I was or squirt water at his way or you know that doesn't work. He don't fucking care.
No. Can't discipline him when they're having fun.
No. Yeah, it should. All right, so now we're on to your character.
All right, so I'm going to cover episode 12, The Bus Boy. Yes. This is the 17th episode of Seinfeld to air, despite being the 8th produced. The episode was the 12th and final episode of the show's second season. Okay, so it came out in 91. George, Jerry, and Elaine are at dinner when a menu of a table next to them catches on fire. And when George suggests that the busboy should be fired for that, he does get fired and he feels bad. So, I think, he has a cat and they accidentally get like, let him loose. Remember that when Jerry,
Baquita.
Yeah, where exactly.
Baquita?
Yeah, like basically George just makes his life worse from there on out. But the busboy, he was played by David Labiosa. He's an actor who's been a whole bunch of TV over the years, like a lot of these character actors. And he was in shows like Silk Stockings, Diagnosis Murder, NYPD Blue, and CSI, Miami, and JAG. But in 1981, when he was quite young, he was 20 years old, yeah, he was in a horror film. It was based on an actual paranormal case that occurred in the 70s, and it's known as the Doris Bither case, also known as the Entity Haunting.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, 1974 investigation that about an alleged paranormal phenomena in Culver City with a woman named Doris Bither. So there was a novel written about it, The Entity. And of course, I'm talking about the film that was made in the 80s called The Entity, starring Barbara Hershey. And she plays a character named Carla Moran, who's, you know, basically Doris Bither. And Ron Silver, who plays a therapist named Dr. Phil Snyderman, is trying to help her out. David Labiosa, the busboy, plays Billy, Carla's son. So that's a pretty good role. I like the tagline for this. There's no escape from something you cannot see. True.
Yeah, it's very true.
Yeah, is Martin Scorsese included this movie as on his top 11 scariest horror films of all time. That's pretty interesting. So I do like the movie The Entity. It's pretty, I think the idea of it is cool. You know, like she's like viciously attacked and raped by this invisible being. And she's so desperate that she ends up turning to a team of parapsychologists who try to figure out, like, they set up basically an experimental environment to observe her. But it's kind of cool. It's like a full mock-up of her house. And it's created to lure the entity into a trap and freeze it with liquid helium. I think that concept is so cool.
Yeah.
Just having this, like, contained environment where you can observe this person who, you know, supposedly is going through, like, basically a poltergeist or a haunting. If you go, if you look up the entity, the film on Wikipedia, there's like a crazy graphic depiction of the sexual aspects of the film, which I think is weird. I'm like, who the heck wrote this? Links to some of these things that are occurring. I'm like, damn, you don't need to go that far. But yeah, the Doris Bither case is pretty interesting. I think that basically she was just like straight up a drunk. But whatever. I mean, you know, some of these cases, when it comes down to it, are going to be just people who are mentally ill and fucked up, who are kind of imagining things or went through trauma in their early lives. But the movie is really cool. I don't know if you've seen it recently. I've watched it probably within the last 5 years or so.
Oh, it's been longer than that for me, but I have seen it. But yeah, yeah, it's been a long time.
Revisit, because it is. It's got a good, like, I like the tone of it a lot. You know, like, I really enjoy, like, 70s horror films, early 80s, obviously, too. This was 1981 when it came out. But yeah, it has like a weird ending where she, you know, you think like, OK, we trapped this entity, we're good. But then she comes home. And I don't want to say this word because it's gross to me, but it, he comes home and a demonic voice just goes, "Welcome home." C word that rhymes with runt.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like, damn. And she's like, "Okay, I'm out of here," and like leaves the house. But yeah, The Entity, I think it's definitely worth a review, you know, because it is got like a spooky tone. It is like entertaining. It is like totally a weird film. And I like any kind of paranormal, like ghost, demonic possession type films. But this is more like, I guess you'd call it like a an incubus succubus type film.
Yeah, I'm also down with those type of films too. I like demonic stuff, a cult horror, I guess. I'm big into that.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so it falls in line with that. But yeah, that's my. My busboy tie-in directly from the busboy to the entity.
Yeah, the busboy was always kind of tripped me out too. Like, why is his shirt so goddamn tight? Like, everything about him is tight, and the way he stands too is like, he's very like unhinged, you know?
Yeah. I love that part, the line where it's at the end and he's feeling pretty good about his life, like things are back on track. And he's just like, and I have a new job, which I am very late. It's like, what the hell? He's like super late to his new job. It's just weird.
He gets in a fight with that guy Lance trying to get rid of in the hallway. Oh,
that's right.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. All right, so my character I chose for this one is going to be Alton Bennis, who was Elaine's dad in the episode The Jacket from season 2, episode 3, played by Lawrence Tierney, I believe is how you say his last name.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, he's great. He's got a hell of a presence about him. He's intimidating as shit, you know.
Yikes.
But he's got some really cool horror connections. He's actually in one of my all-time favorite werewolf movies. He was Owen in Silver Bullet from 1985.
Ah, yes. Very cool.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, he's the guy that has the cool bat, you know, at the bar and stuff that comes into play. Yeah. Nice. I can't remember what that bat said. That bat says something that's on there. I just can't remember what it says off my head right now. But
yeah.
Yeah, and that's cool because that bat comes back into play like when they go hunting for the werewolf and then the werewolf uses the fucking bat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you just see the bat in there and the werewolf arm going down, beating the shit out of somebody. I'm like, that's fucking cool.
Amazing.
Love Silver Bullet. I know the werewolf ain't the best in the world, but, you know, it's effective, especially as a younger kid, a younger person. It's effective as fuck.
Yeah. That's a Stephen King novella, Cycle of the Werewolf.
Yes, which I own finally. I got the softcover version. I believe there's a hardcover version that was out there, but it was like impossible to get. And like eBay wanted like $300 or $400 for it, you know, because it's not in print anymore. But I found a soft cover edition pretty cheap. So,
yeah, good old Gary Busey when he was not as like crazed as he is now.
No, he was crazy, but he was like, crazy in an okay way where he can get a movie done. Now he's like fucking out there, like fucking super crazy. But
yeah,
he played the drunk uncle really well.
Yeah, basically that was just him.
Yeah, it's like you just gonna go on stage and you're gonna pretend this is your your nephew here. So just go do your thing. I don't got no lines. No, there's no lines, Gary. You just go do your thing. You know, here's some alcohol. What's that?
Good old Corey Haim. I miss him.
Yeah, same here.
One of his last films was actually out here in Tucson. I remember seeing like people hanging out with him and stuff down at the bar. And, yeah, he did not look good.
Oh, yeah. It's a shame.
Yeah.
I like Corey Feldman still, too. I mean, you know, all those Corys growing up and stuff, even though Corey Feldman's really out there. But I'm glad he's still doing stuff and he seems pretty healthy. He's just, you know, he's Corey Feldman.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting guy. I'll always be a fan. You know, it's interesting that he does like music and plays here and there. I wouldn't probably go to one of those things because I like to think of him in a certain way.
Right, same here. Yeah.
Not doing like Michael Jackson stuff. I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, he does metal too, with quotation marks, heavy rock and metal as well. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, but you know, he's a child actor guy. They're all a little bit. Not all, but some of them ended up a little bit nutty just, you know, because of that lifestyle and things they had to go through. And their view of the world is different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, he's great. I always loved him. Great films. Stand By Me. I loved him in that. Of course, Goonies, The Lost Boys.
Yeah. It's classics he was in.
Yeah. He's in so many good things.
Mm-hmm. Another cool film that's a hidden gem to most people that don't know, but Lawrence Tierney was also in 1991's The Runestone. Mm. You ever seen that?
No, never heard of it.
Oh, dude, The Runestone is a fucking great monster movie.
Oh, really?
Like practical monster movie, yeah.
Cool.
And it deals with Norse mythology.
Awesome.
I read the little synopsis. A Norse runestone is discovered in western Pennsylvania. The prophecy upon it tells of a Norse great wolf, Fenrir.
What?
Which is related to, you know, the whole story of Ragnarok and all that stuff. And Yeah. There's also a clockmaker in this movie who is the protector of the runestone for, you know, whatever gets out of that runestone. His job is to take care of it and kill it. And he's actually Tyr, you know, from Norse mythology. Oh, so it's Tyr versus Fenris. Yeah.
I see. It's like an updated Ragnarok type movie.
Sort of, kind of, yeah. And it's definitely, it has that 90s cop drama horror thing going on with it. But
their
creature
that.
Effects are really fucking good, I think. And I recently watched this a few years ago, and it still holds up. It just feels straight, like, awesome 90s monster movie.
I like that era. Yeah, cool.
I think, pretty sure you can find it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
It was on Tubi for a second, but YouTube's going to have it most likely. Somebody's going to have a shitty quality copy up there, like the VHS, like, burn or something, you know. But you definitely want to check this out. It says comedy to it. I don't see any comedy in the Runestone to me. Yeah. Maybe a few things here and there, yeah. It's pretty strictly, like, you know, monster horror movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen this poster, this cover, but the artwork or whatever, the poster cover does not look interesting. Like they should have put like something from that, like the practical effects. It just looks like a weird, boring crime drama based on the movie poster.
Yeah. So, yeah. The poster does it no justice.
No, it's like, I'm not watching that.
I used to watch the shit out of that movie. I like burned through the VHS of this movie. I had to rent it every time I would get it, though. I couldn't afford to buy VHS back then. But yeah, I watched this movie a ton when I was a kid.
I'm definitely going to watch this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Runestone. Fucking fun as shit.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's great.
All right. So we're moving on to your last character, correct? Yeah.
This is my last one. This is episode 10, The Baby Shower. So this is, I think this is, with, what's her name? You almost chose her as well. Or you chose her, Christine.
Dunford.
Yes. This is the one where I almost chose her, but I went instead with one of the other actors. So, Elaine holds a baby shower for her friend, Leslie. That's Christine Dunford, at Jerry's apartment while Jerry's performing in Buffalo. And he's, frustrated by his TV's bad reception when he comes back. Kramer convinces him to have cable illegally installed. I've done that. It wasn't two Russians, but I did get caught and it got disconnected. Anyway, one of the two Russians that installed the cable for him is the actor Vic Polizos. He is a screen and television actor as well as a director. But check this out. This connection made me happy. This actor, Vic Polizos, played a coroner in Night of the Creeps.
Oh, nice. That's really cool.
Yes. Of course, one of my all-time favorites, written and directed by Fred Decker in 1986, who is also Fred Decker. You know, we got to give him props for Monster Squad and House.
Oh, hell yeah.
Other great 80s horror comedy classics.
Yes.
Just for anybody who doesn't know the storyline of Night of the Creeps. So it's like in the 50s, there is an alien experiment that crashes to Earth and infects a frat boy. Mm-hmm. And they freeze the body. But in the modern day, these two guys who are pledging a fraternity, they accidentally thaw the corpse, you know, how it goes. And then this proceeds to infect the campus with parasites that transform their hosts into killer zombies. Yay! Great one-liners. Of course, Tom Atkins plays one of the best detective horror 80s characters ever.
100%. Yeah, he's the man. Yeah,
he's so wry. Detective Ray Cameron. And his sarcastic delivery of the line, "Thrill me," which is something I think is so funny and so, like, it just stands out so much. I just love that line. It's so weird. It's a weird thing to, like, put in a script as a guy who just says it constantly.
Yeah, you don't hear that often, you know, except for this film.
And, you know, just the way he says it in the context, he says he just answers the phone with it, you know. And I actually, you know, I like it so much that I use it as part of my IG handle and my, like, so-called middle name on Facebook. So, like, people have actually called me, like, "Thrill Me Campbell" or "Hey, Thrill Me," because I use it all over the place.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I did get to meet him at the last Monster Palooza that I went to. And so it was cool. You know, I have a photo with him and then assigned, like, 8x10 glossy, that just says, like, "To Sonya, thrill me." and that was like so cool to have that. And I also have a Maniac Cop poster where he signed it to me as well.
Oh, it's badass. I love Maniac Cop too. Oh, so good. Yeah.
I love the other line, like, the good news is your dates are here. What's the bad news? The bad news is they're dead. but yeah, just a little fun note. Like, this is something that only Fred Decker should do, and no one now should ever do this again, where all the last names of the main characters are based on famous horror and sci-fi directors.
Mm-hmm.
So you got Chris Romero, of course, George Ray Romero. You got John Carpenter and Toby Hooper, and the characters are James Carpenter and Hooper. You have Cynthia Cronenberg, obvious. And you got Detective Ray Cameron. He was named after James Cameron. Detective Landis, Sergeant Raimi, and Mr. Miner, Steve Miner, is the janitor. So dorky, but totally fine to do it that one time in this one movie.
Right, totally. Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah. So, of course, you know, it's a classic. I love everything about that movie. It's so fun and a perfect 80s horror comedy.
100% agreed. One of the best.
Yeah. So it's just cool. Like, I never had really put those two together at any time that I've seen the baby shower episode and the Russians. I don't even recall the coroner in it, and it's kind of fun. Like, the next time I watch it, I'll know.
Yeah, I love the connections there. Like, that's cool. Like, yeah. Seinfeld connects to everything.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. So I guess my turn now.
And you're also going to talk about the baby shower episode?
Am I? Or, I don't. Let's see. I'm not sure if I am. Hold on a second. Let me see here, because I got Leslie. Yeah, I do have. Yeah, there is this connection with Leslie. Yeah. So I'm going. I'm talking about Leslie right now. Leslie was played by Christine Dunford, and she was in the baby shower episode, which is a great one. Mm-hmm. You know? And so her horror connection is another anthology series from 88 to 90. It wasn't a very long lasting one, but I think it was a really fucking good one. And that was Monsters, the TV series. You remember that?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, that's another good one. I guess, let me see where it's streaming at for you real quick. Yeah, Monsters is really fucking cool. It has like this crazy ass intro where this family's watching monsters on their TV while they are monsters. Like, the monsters are watching monsters. It's like a monster dad, monster mom, and a kid with like a Cyclops kid, and they're eating like these fucking gummy humans while they're watching a TV show.
I remember that now, but no, I hadn't seen it.
It's on Tubi right now, so you can watch them all on Tubi.
Is it kind of sort of a like PG-13?
Not really. I mean, there's some dark ones on there. There's some like horror comedy ones. There's some definitely some darker ones. I wouldn't say PG-13. I would say PG-13 to some like mild rated R type stuff. But it came on. I can't remember what network it came on, but.
Yeah.
Like, the very first one is one of the most fucked up, weird fucking episodes. And it's the very first one of the first season, called The Fever Man. Mm-hmm. And it's about this doctor that he takes away fevers, but he fights fevers, and not the way you think he does. He has this like charm. He's like a shaman type guy, and he pulls the fever out of these people. And these fevers are like these giant, like, mutated looking human type creature things, and he actually fights them with his hands, you know what I mean? Like, that's how he beats the fever, and it is fucking weird. Cool. Super weird. Yeah,
I totally remember this. I don't know why I didn't watch it. Yeah, it's weird, because it was 88 to 90 and had all kinds of people. Meatloaf was in it. Mm-hmm. Debbie Harry. This is cool.
Yeah, really, really cool. I think you definitely dig this, especially since you don't remember seeing it. It's going to be new to you, so you're definitely going to enjoy it.
Let me see. I think it was because I might not have lived here at the time. Like, when I, 88 to 90. Did I live here yet? No. I missed some stuff during that era, if it was on television, if it was on syndicated TV, because when I lived in Germany, we only had one American network. And it only showed like certain things, of course, during the day. It would be like, you know, the Muppet Show and like maybe Reading Rainbow and stuff. Like, for kids stuff, it would have like pretty like tame things. Only on Friday nights, I did see Tales of the Dark Side, Elvira, Outer Limits would come on late at night, but I never caught this show because I wasn't living here and they didn't have it on this station. But I would have watched it. But I do like looking at images of that family with the Cyclops and stuff. Totally seen that before. Yeah, it looks like it's on Tubi, so I guess I can catch up on it now.
Yeah, it's so good. I think the episodes are like 30 or 40 minutes, if that. I think they do two episodes per episode, like two stories per episode. I can't remember, but cool. Yeah, you're going to really dig that.
Episodes. Cool. Okay. Yeah, I have all kinds of things I can watch and catch up on.
Yep, and I got some stuff marked on mine. But that was my horror connection with Christine Dunford, who played the horrible... the horrible like artsy person on that episode.
It was awful. Yeah. Yes.
Horrible, mean person.
And I didn't quite understand why he continued to dote on her. I'm like, she sucks.
Yeah, well, he wanted to like get the comeback, you know, because he wore the sweatshirt that had the chocolate stains. Like, I'm gonna call her out, you know, I'm gonna.
Yeah.
And then he ended up like carrying all her shit downstairs and everything.
She was just, yeah. I'm like, ugh, she's awful.
You told Elaine before she left, you're just like you were in college. And Elaine's like, thank you. You know, I was like, I'm pretty sure that wasn't a, you know, a good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know people like that. They're horrible.
Totally. I can't stand people like that.
So I got two more left. So I'm just going to go through those two pretty fast or whatever. But we're going to go with Glenn Shaddix, who plays Harold, you know, from the apartment episode in season two.
Glenn Shaddix. Okay.
All right. He played I'm sorry. Well, I'm getting my things mixed up. Yeah, he played Harold, but his biggest role for me, anyways, was Otho in Beetlejuice.
Yeah. I remember this guy in Seinfeld. That's cool.
And he's passed away, unfortunately. So he won't be in a Beetlejuice. You know, the new one, unfortunately.
That's crazy. I completely don't remember that. But yeah, in 2010, he died from an accidental fall. That's terrible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I liked him in Beetlejuice. Like, he was really good. Like, he really nailed that, like, what you would call, like, that artsy guy feeling, you know? Yes. Like, yeah.
He was hilarious. Yeah, he had kind of, he reminds me of, like, what's his name? Nathan Lane a little bit.
Yeah, definitely reminds me of Nathan Lane, yeah.
Yeah, he was great.
He was also in a, I think, a killer film. A lot of people are like, oh, that movie sucks. I think it's pretty cool. It's not perfect, but it's a cool-ass movie, and it's a good Stephen King story. He was in Sleepwalkers from 1992. He was Mr. Fallows in that.
I liked it, too, and it isn't that great, but I do like it.
Yeah, and the cats are the heroes. I mean, that's the best fucking part. Like, the cats are the fucking heroes of the whole story because those creatures can't fuck with cats, you know?
Right.
And they're kind of cats themselves, if you think about it. Like, they're like cat creatures.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. But yeah, he was in that, too. So that's two solid, like, horror connections there.
I guess voice in Nightmare Before Christmas as well. And
yeah.
Demolition Man. Love that movie.
Oh, yeah. Love Demolition Man.
Not that it's a horror, but it's a good movie.
Yeah. The whole Taco Bell thing was so weird to me. That wasn't Demolition Man. Yeah. I'm trying not to get that mixed up with Judge Dredd. But I'm pretty sure the Taco Bell, like the small teeny portions, that was Demolition Man. And then the shells, like the three shells when you go to the bathroom.
That's how it should be.
Yeah. Shells and tiny Taco Bell.
Wow.
So cool. I got one more connection. This is a good one here. It's horror adjacent here. It's, you know, it's a fantasy action type movie. But anyways, James Hong, who played Bruce in the restaurant episode, I believe it's called there, you know, where they're waiting for at the Chinese restaurant trying to get a table.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Cartwright.
You know, yes. You know,
Cartwright the whole time. But yeah, James Hong, he was the great Lo Pan in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
That's consider that, you know, that's definitely in the horror area. I mean, there's monsters and stuff in there. Yeah.
Monsters, yeah, it's definitely a horror movie.
I've had people fight with me before saying that that's not a horror movie. Also, as somebody tell me that Starship Troopers ain't like a horror, like monster movie. And the whole fucking movie is about fighting giant monster insect alien type things. So
Yeah, I mean, I could see why someone might put it more like Big Trouble in Little China in like action category, but like you said, it does have monsters. It's you know, it has a freaking 8 foot tall maniac in it. I mean, it's when some wild eyed 8 foot tall maniac grabs your neck. I love that quote from Jack Burton. He has so many funny quotes, but I would say, you know, it's got thrills in it that are in the horror vein, but it's like horror light, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
So fun. I would say a horror comedy action movie.
Yes.
I don't know. And it's like I said, John Carpenter directed it. I mean, there's several elements that point to it being for horror fans.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it's so good. It still holds up so well. Like, is this a fun, like, good, and like, it's just a fun movie to watch, you know? It's like, it's just a comfort movie for me.
Yeah. Yeah, so good.
There was another thing that James was connected with. He's been in a few things. I only picked out a couple, but another really cool, I think, hidden gem that James Hong was in the 1992 to 96 vampire series Forever Night.
Oh, I like that show. That one I did see. Yeah, Forever Night. That's a good one.
Yeah, very it's kind of underrated and a bit unknown, but I know it was like huge in Canada. I think it was a Canadian series that, you know,
is that right? Game.
I'm pretty sure it was a Canadian series. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
double checking right now. Yeah. Forever Night's really good. Yeah. Canada and West Germany is the countries of origin with this.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Was it night like a knight in armor? Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, really dark and like, I don't know, it was a really good, like, dark brooding vampire series. It was really good.
Nick Knight, he was an 800-year-old vampire working as a homicide detective on the graveyard shift. How good is that?
Yeah, I mean, description alone should sell that for you.
I don't know what it is about. I never get tired of horror and detective stuff. Give me more horror and detective stuff.
Yeah, they go together like super well.
Yeah. Occult detective fiction is the genre. Yes.
Yeah. And we don't get enough of those. We haven't had one of those in a while, if I'm not mistaken.
It feels like it. Yeah. Not like this. Yeah. It's a great genre.
I miss the dark 90s detective / horror dramas like we're talking about now. They mostly came out in the 90s too. And like, there's something, even the regular like detective shows in the 90s, detective movies are fucking dark and almost feel like horror movies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Apparently, you can watch it on Roku for free.
What's that, a Forever Night?
Yes.
Yeah, it changes. It was on Tubi for a while, so I guess Roku has the rights to it now, so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great throwback. So, yeah, I think out of this episode here, we're going to have some really good horror recommendations for the listeners and stuff that, you know, some hidden gems, I guess you would say.
Yeah. You got Terror Tract on there, right?
I do. That's on my list of things to watch.
Perfect.
Yeah. Might watch that tonight. I have, after I get done with this, it's weightlifting time. Fun. Yeah. I do like weightlifting. It helps me mentally. So it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if I have enough energy, I will be watching that tonight for sure.
Good. Yeah.
I'm going to be doing a episode soon, hopefully, with a really cool, like, weightlifting, or actually working out weightlifting episode with what are they called here? I'm gonna check this real quick. Death Comes Lifting. There you go. That's the company. What? They do like, have you heard of them?
No.
They tie in weightlifting and stuff with horror, and they like have these really badass shirts. They have like their own gym. It's called Death Comes Lifting, and I'm gonna be talking with one of the owners of that soon. I'm pretty it's gonna be awesome.
Interesting.
Yeah, to tie in like two favorites of mine, like weightlifting and horror movies. That's such a good fucking idea.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, like a friend of mine, he listened to the last episode and he was like, I think it's so funny that suddenly it turned into like this weightlifting podcast. And I for like 20 minutes, I'm like, well, you know, it's just like, there's things people have in common sometimes. And when you can fit two together, it makes it even better. You know, like, I don't go to the gym per se, but if I did, I'd want like cool apparel.
Yeah.
cool. I'd want like an interesting different, like for instance, at Hollywood Forever Cemetery, they do a yoga class there. I'd go to that.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
So that's so cool.
I've only tried yoga once or twice in my life, and I was doing that when I was doing was it P90X or something like that way back in the day. I was all in like that insanity workouts, and which were pretty insane, but it's all body weight stuff, and they had some yoga shit mixed in where there. I was getting flexible. I cannot do that stuff anymore. Yeah.
Oh,
But
that's cool.
yeah, so check them out, and they're gonna be on the show sooner than later, so that's gonna be fun.
Nice. Yeah. I'm checking out their Instagram. I'm going to follow them for sure.
Cool. But yeah, this has been a great second episode of the Masters of Our Horror Domain. So we got like every season of Seinfeld to get through, so there'd be plenty more to come.
Yeah, it's great. I love that it uncovers new information for me and gives me new things to watch each time.
Yeah, because like I said, there's so much stuff out there from back in the day till now. Like, you never watch everything. So that's why it's cool to have people like us who can, throw out cool suggestions and, find shit we have never seen before.
Yeah, exactly. I apparently have a chunk of good horror television to catch up with.
Yeah, I'm kind of jealous of all the good horror TV stuff that you haven't seen yet. I'm like, I wish it was my first time seeing some of these. Like, oh, they're so fucking good, and like, it's nothing like seeing it for the first time.
Yeah, I don't know why I didn't really think of that before. Like I've seen all the movies because people know about them, you can find them, but series are different. It's like, oh yeah, there's also television. That's good. Yeah.
And don't forget the runestone. That's a fun
I
one.
wrote that one down up as a must see.
Yeah, that's gonna scratch your like detective horror movie itch big time. That's like the perfect combination.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, this has been a great episode, and we will do this again soon.
Right.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing the Seinfeld episode 2, Masters of Our Horror Domain. There's a tongue twister, but it works.
I'm queen of the castle.
You're queen. Well, you're queen of the castle. I'm king of the manor. Is that what?
I think
Is that how
that's
it goes? I think so. Gotta revisit that episode.
yeah.
Awesome. Well, I hope you have a good rest of your weekend. Enjoy the rest of your catter day.
All right, you
I'm
too.
gonna try to do the same. And yep, talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks for having me on.
Later.
Bye-bye.